Welcome to the Aquarimax audio show with Russ and Kim. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 267, recorded September 14th, 2015.
Greetings, Aquarimaxers.
Hello again. Here we are.
Yep.
Sitting on the couch, holding the field recorder.
Yeah, because the tripod mount bit is missing.
Trena. It's scampered.
That's all right. We'll manage.
Okay.
Maybe you can actually hear us better because we're closer slightly.
Probably.
All right. So who have we got this week?
We have Juliet in Paris, France, and Trey in Austin, Texas. Joe in Hudsonville, Michigan. Right.
Yep.
I always want to say Mississippi when it's MI, but really Mississippi is what? MS. Is that...
I can't remember.
Yeah, because Missouri's M-O. M-O. Yeah. Montana's M-T.
Yep.
Anyways, that has nothing to do with anything. And I think you're going to have an axolotl video for us.
Maybe. I don't know. This one came out a little fuzzy. I might have to wait.
We'll think about it.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's go to Juliet. She says, "Dear Russ and Kelly, here's a photo of my moss wall, which needs trimming. I do not recommend using white plastic mesh, as black or green would be better, but even so, this took 4 months and the moss pretty much hide most of it."
And I put the picture in the document. Check it out.
So you can see it because you're going to put it up on...
The moss does pretty cover most
of
the white stuff.
It looks
cool.
You're going to put it up for people to see.
Yeah. Yeah. And... I mean, it works really well, even with the white stuff, but it works better, yeah, with the black or the green.
She has a funny note. She says, "This was supposed to be an aquascape. This is what an aquascape looks like when you go away for a month."
And then, this is the picture there.
This is after a month?
Yeah. She went away for a month, and things grew rampantly.
Yeah, oh, it's nice. Yeah. It's kind of the, you know, secret garden.
Jungle-esque.
Yeah. Says, "Note how well the moss and Java fern are doing now that I have a pH of 7.2 as opposed to my previous 8.3. At 8.3, I could have called it blasted heath or zombie apocalypse. Now it's more like Tarzan chill out zone until I trim it all back. I got 10 baby red cherry Bloody Marys yesterday, and they're doing great. Cross your fingers. The girl who sold them to me feeds them on dried nettle leaves. Only one or two a week for a tank full of adults. No pellet food, only a bit of leftover fish food gets to them from above from her tiny rasboras. Her shrimp are beautiful, and she has at least 8 species. I've never seen shrimp so enthusiastic about food. Give nettles a try, but get them from the countryside with no pollution or pesticides like she does." I suppose you could grow some, too. And then you would know what was on them.
Yeah. You know, this is an interesting point, the whole thing about the leaves, because I've read about other people feeding their shrimp mostly leaves.
Mm-hmm.
Like oak leaves, fallen oak leaves and things like that. Beech leaves, I think Mick may have mentioned that before. I think it was beech leaves that he used. So yeah, it's probably pretty close to what they naturally get as a main part of their food.
Mm-hmm.
Leaves falling into streams and stuff, and they eat them, so it makes sense. Mm-hmm. It makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And then it's also not quite as rich in terms of, you know, some of the nutrients that can lead to algae growth and things like that. So
I guess that would make sense.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, guys, we forgot to shut the windows, so you're probably hearing lots of traffic drive by. She says, "The poor little lawn was swamped by moss, which is why it is no longer lawn, but only a few sprigs. We'll see if it recovers." So we'll put the pictures up for you guys to see.
Yeah, I want to see how the lawn comes in. The lawn's in tanks, one of my favorite things to grow.
Yeah, it's pretty.
Very cool. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so thanks, Juliet. Shall we go to Trey in Austin, Texas?
Yeah.
Okay. And he puts a bunch of O's on his hello, so I get to read it like this. "Hello, Russ and Kelly."
Yep.
It's kind of like Pooh Bear. You, hello. Okay. "I recently discovered your podcast and have listened to every episode. I work from home, so I have plenty of time to listen to podcasts and stare at my beautiful fish. I have a couple of questions that hopefully you or one of your listeners can help me with. First, I have three pea dwarf puffers that still look very emaciated after 2 weeks of feeding bloodworms and Malaysian trumpet snails. They've been eating quite a bit, but still have the big head, tiny body thing going on. Is this normal for dwarf puffers?"
Hmm. Well,
I always think their heads look big on them, but it might be useful to see a picture to see how big their head is and how tiny their body is.
Picture's coming up.
Go ahead and read the next
paragraph, though, before we go on, because it's relating to that.
Said, I recently set up their 10-gallon planted tank for my oldest son, who is 11. He's had a rough go of things with his own tanks, emerald eye rasboras that kept jumping out of the tank, as well as two bettas that succumbed to dropsy before that. So I really want this one to work out, since he has shown a keen interest in the hobby, and it's something we get to share. The 10-gallon is fully cycled. It's been running continuously for 4 years with various stock and decor changes. Filtration is provided via an AquaClear 20 hang-on-the-back filter, and it went all out on lighting with a current Pro Plus LED.
Wow.
There are red Cryptocorinae, Wendy, I'm guessing on that one, Java fern, Anubias, and some other plant I can't recall at the moment in the tank. Water parameters are good. Zero ammonia, zero nitrites, and nitrates are around 10 to 20 parts per million. I have learned that most varieties of puffers sold in fish stores are wild-caught and very prone to internal parasites. For this reason, I've already treated the tank with API General Cure and done 2 25% water changes. And then, okay, there's the pictures.
See, it does look pretty emaciated, but from the top you can really see it.
Oh, yeah, he's quite skinny.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about that. Well, you know, in all the times I've kept dwarf puffers, I guess I haven't kept that many, but probably, I don't know, 4 or 5 of them, mm-hmm. and not all at the same time. It seems to me that I never encountered that issue.
The parasites?
Right. Well, I guess what I should say is none of my puffer fish ever exhibited that symptom of being really emaciated. I always got them, usually I got them when they were quite small, but they were already rotund when I got them, and they stayed that way. It just got more rotund of anything. Mm-hmm. So, never having dealt with the issue, I'm not sure if I can provide a whole lot, but I do agree that puffers often do carry parasites. I would agree. And what does API General Cure handle? I'm not sure.
I don't know that.
I haven't used that particular medication, so I don't know. But it may be a parasite issue, and you may be able to treat it accordingly, but I'm not sure exactly what the API General Cure is composed of. But anyway, I don't think it is normal. It wasn't normal for any of mine, and it does seem like there is a problem you need to address. And you were saying you were giving them bloodworms and Malaysian trumpet snails, was that right?
Yeah.
Okay. You know, you might try, possibly, giving them some grindleworms.
Grindleworms are good.
That might help fatten them up a bit.
The grindleworms have more fat.
Grindleworms are fatty, like we talked about with Mick last week. Mm. And that might be a good thing to build them up, even if they are, you know, dealing with parasite issues, is to give them something with a little fat and it might help them.
Boost them?
Yeah, give them a boost, possibly.
Okay.
I don't know. That's one suggestion.
Does anybody else say, if anybody else has any insight, feel free to write in.
Please.
Yes. Okay. It's time for that station break thingy when I tell you how you can play an active part in the Aquiramax community. If you want your questions or comments featured on the show, send us an email at info@aquiramax.com or call and leave a message at 801-477-0629. You can also subscribe to the Aquiramax YouTube channel, like our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter.
And now for a blatant but extremely brief plug.
Our ebook, The Aquiramax Guide to 7 Easy Live Foods, is available on Amazon.com for $2.99. My second question is indirectly related to my 55-gallon Hap Peacock Malawi tank. In order to buffer the pH, I use Texas Holy Rock or Honeycomb Limestone for my hardscape. Luckily, I live in Central Texas, so this stuff is literally just lying around. My in-laws have 5 acres covered in it and encouraged me to bring some home. I let the rocks sit outside in the sun for a few months and then recently cleaned them off with a high-pressure hose before soaking them in a 5-gallon bucket with a mixture of 1 part bleach to 10 parts water. After soaking them like this for a few days, I took them back outside and sprayed them off again. They've been in the sun drying for a few days now, so I'm wondering, One, is this rock safe to add to my tank, or is there something else I should do, like maybe soaking it in an H2O C-Chem Prime mixture first? And two, can I reuse the bucket that I used for the bleach soak when I do water changes? It's been rinsed and drying for a few days.
Okay.
Well, and my... sent a picture of a cichlid tank.
Oh, it looks really cool. Yeah. I always like that Texas Holy mm-hmm. Rock stuff.
Yeah, it's fun nice. Stuff.
I would say, if it were me, I would put the... I would do the... like the C-Chem Prime bath that he was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So you put some, put the C-Chem Prime into the water at a higher concentration than you would for just dechlorinating tap water, just to make sure. Because the rock is so porous,
you I would feel like... You want it to get all the way in there.
Yeah, because if you just rinse it off and then put it straight in your tank, I feel like with that porosity, it might have little pockets of...
bleach or whatever still
bleach
in it.
Bleach still in it, or bleach-laced water in it, and just... You know, if the longer you let it sit there in the sun, you let it sit long enough, it's going to dry, and chlorine bleach does evaporate pretty effectively. I mean, it's not going to leave a residue if it's completely evaporated, but if it's not, then there could be an issue. So I would do that just to be safe.
Okay.
I would use the bucket, too. If it's rinsed and completely dried, like I said, you know, the chlorine does leave, and yeah, the bucket is not porous. So
that's
I wouldn't
true.
Worry about it.
If, okay.
As long as you can't smell any bleach in it, I'd be fine.
Okay.
Yep.
Very cool. So
he's
there's more
pictures.
We'll
more
put some pictures. More pictures up for you guys.
Of the Texas Holy Rock. And then some other tanks.
Oh, yeah. His. Bonus pictures of his other tanks. He says just around 28-gallon Bowfront Amazon tank.
Yeah, I like that.
It's like...
it's a nice piece of driftwood going on, and the plant counterbalances it nicely.
Mm-hmm.
And he says what he's got in there.
He's got two Bolivian rams, a rummy nose tetra school, albino bristle nose placo, five quarries, and assassin snails. So, and we'll put all these up. And his 20-gallon long is three dwarf grammys, four threadfin rainbow fish, nine harlequin rasboras, three harad jardonis, or Asian stone catfish, and Siamese algae eater to be rehomed when he gets bigger.
Good idea.
Yeah.
They tend to get kind of mean sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
I love the rasboras in there. And actually, the way that he's done the lines with the wood and the plants
looks
really cool. The harlequin rasboras are one of my favorite schooling fish. They just tend to stay together a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And the threadfin rainbow fish are fun, too. Interesting displays that the males do. So thank you for sharing. Thank you for joining us on the podcast. This is Trey's first time, so that's cool. Welcome.
Okay. Joe in Hudsonville, Michigan. So it's Russ and Kelly. I talked to my yellowheads, Ginny and Chloe, out of the blue gravel on top of the fluorite black sand. Can you translate that sentence for me?
Mm-hmm. His daughters have a tank in their room. I believe it's in their room.
And they're blonde?
Yeah, they are.
Okay.
And they have...
Oh, right, because they wanted blue gravel.
Yeah, they wanted the blue gravel,
okay.
But he doesn't really want to do the blue gravel, and so he's...
No.
Black sand. They're just doing the
cool.
fluorite black sand.
Okay.
Yep.
I'm interested in what you think my next logical step for my tank to be more planted. Livestock in the tank is as follows: four glow-like tetras, two cardinal tetras, four emerald eye rasboras, four antlers live bears, one bristlenose placo, two assassin snails, and four red cherry shrimp.
Okay. Well, where did the picture go? Let's take a look. I'm going to pop that up. Maybe the picture is just in the email.
Oh, wait. Where did it go?
I'm just going to look it up here. Oh, there it is.
Okay. So.
Here comes the picture, ladies and gentlemen. There.
They can't see it, though.
Oh, no, but I can. And you can.
Yeah.
Look, there's a pirate.
There's a pirate. You guys are going to have to go check out the picture so you can
but
see the pirate.
I do think the fluorite black sand is a good
machine.
Step.
I don't know how to go back to where you had all the notes.
Oh, well, I can... get us back there.
This is fascinating radio right now.
That's okay. Okay.
Okay.
So you can start reading right there.
You may finish it before talking about it. Okay. The tank is planted as seen in the pictures. Next question, I was listening to older episodes and I'm interested in being proactive against microbacteria with the use of a UV filter. Do you have any recommendations for a 15-gallon tank? Thanks, as always, for the great podcast.
Okay. So next logical step for the tank to be more planted. Well, I think it looks good the way it is. It's a good setup. But I would say in terms of plants, I would add some fast-growing stem plants and a couple of bunches there to keep algae from growing. Something like, what would be good? something like Rotala or Kabomba or Hornwort, or, you know, depending on your water, something like that. There are lots of different choices there. I guess you could go with Ludwigia would be another one that I've grown and I like. Something that will grow pretty fast, you can cut back often, but it will pull nutrients out of the water. So a couple of bunches of those, several, in terms of plants. With regard to lighting, what kind of lighting do you have in there? Because that could be,
that is important. That match the plants, I suppose.
Right, right, and that will kind of dictate which kind of plants you can do. Now, the tank is fairly shallow, it looks like, so that does open up some possibilities. In a deep tank, you have to have really strong lighting. In a shallower one, you can get away sometimes with a little less intensity, just because it doesn't have to penetrate as deeply into the water column. Another thing you might want to consider doing, I don't remember what you're dosing with, if you're dosing with anything, but doing some Seachem Flourish Excel might be a good thing to start doing, whether or not you're doing fertilizer, just to boost the plant growth. And you might want to consider some CO2, because that will certainly boost your plant growth. Even if you don't do much with the lighting, if you add some CO2, you're likely to get some better plant growth. So those are three steps you could possibly look into. So let us know what your lighting is already, and maybe we can get an idea based on that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So UV filter for a 15-gallon tank.
Well, I don't actually have a specific recommendation in terms of brands, but...
What kind do you have?
You know what? I can't remember what it is. It's like kind of a knockoff sort of brand that I got from Amazon or eBay or something.
But it's worked fine.
It's worked fine.
So maybe brands doesn't really matter.
Well, I think the most important thing to think about is... several things you could think about, but one of them is dwell time.
What does that mean?
How long the water is actually going to be in contact with the UV light.
And like the water circulating through?
Yeah, because there are different ways of carrying the water past it.
It doesn't penetrate all the way through.
It.
It has to. It just gets the water on the top.
Well,
is that what you mean?
I'm not sure what you mean, but what I'm saying is that inside it there is a UV light inside the sterilizer, right?
Okay.
And it's in a tube.
Okay.
And then the water actually needs to pass right next to that light.
The tube sticks down into the water? Or it's up on the top, lighting?
See that box?
Yeah.
On the side there? That's the whole UV filter. It's self-contained. The light's inside there. We don't see it.
Okay.
Okay. And there are...
So you have a box in the water column that has the UV filter inside of it.
Yeah, that's one way to do it, and that's the way mine does it.
Okay.
So then you have to have the water pass right next to the light itself, the lamp.
So it has to go inside the box?
Yes. The water gets sucked inside the box and draws right past that light.
So the dwell time would be how long it's in the box?
How long it's in the box going right by the light.
Okay.
Yes. That's the dwell time. And the dwell time influences heavily, you know, its efficacy. Other things are important too, but sometimes they'll use coil. It'll be like a coil that goes around the bulb, so you're getting a lot of dwell time. I think that's, you know, it's a consideration. Also, some are designed to kill larger organisms than others. Some are designed mostly to handle green water. So just microscopic single-celled algae.
Okay.
And they do fine it with that, but they're not necessarily going to handle, like, larger parasites like ick. It's not enough intensity or dwell time or a combination of both to be able to kill those parasites because they're bigger. So they might get a little damaged, maybe, or maybe not, but they're not going to die like the algae would if it were getting hit by the same intensity of light. So there's some things to think about, but when you're looking, you can look into that and see whether the particular model that you're looking at is designed to handle parasites or just algae. And, you know, mycobacterium, they're small, and so they're more likely to be handled. If that's the main reason you're getting it, they're going to respond by dying pretty well to a UV filter.
Which is what we want.
Yeah, and it won't necessarily kill all of them in the tank, and almost certainly will not, but it will reduce the concentration of the bacterium in the water, and that will, you know, be a good thing for your fish and lessen the possibility that they will get a large enough number of the bacteria in their body to cause a problem.
Okay.
So, I don't know. We just went and found a brand online and got it, and it was good. We haven't had problems since then. Of course, it is important to change the bulbs once in a while. Most of them, within a year, you have to change the bulb.
Okay.
And, yeah. It is harder to find UV sterilizers for smaller tanks. The one we've got was a pretty small one, but it's in a 37-gallon tank. So I do know there's a brand which I have not tried. It's called, Aqua Top. Maybe that's it. Something like that, where they've got a filter, a hang-on-the-back filter, that's got a UV filters in it, in line. So it's in the tubing. There's a UV filter. There's also a surface skimmer, and surface skimmers are really good to help against mycobacteria problems because they draw the oily scum off the surface. And that's one of the main contributors can be to mycobacterium problems, because that oily scum is a good place for those bacteria to congregate, and they like to eat that stuff, but then they breed in it, and then your fish come up to the top and they eat food and ingest some of that oily scum, and then the bacteria get into their body and so on. So if you have a surface skimmer and you have UV, sounds like a good idea. I've never kept that kind of filter, I've never used it, but the idea at least sounds good.
Sound.
That you're putting them both together.
It sounds
sound. Yeah. You're attacking the mycobacteria in two ways. So looking at that type of filter might be worth it. I can't vouch for any particular brand or anything, but it might be an interesting thing to research.
There you go.
Okay.
I think that's everything that we've got.
Okay. Well, thank you for joining us, everyone. And until next time,
may the fish
be with you. Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. To leave comments or questions that could be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.